welcome to minute 20 of season 12 of Movie Room Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is Andy Golding of Blueprint Review. Welcome back once again, Andy.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
Yeah, I hope you don't have too much of a concussion from yesterday's beating.
Yeah, I'm certainly still in shock from it. It's a
understandable. Okay, so minute 20 begins with Fat Ass trying to protect himself and ends with the morning buzzer going off. So we ended things yesterday with Hadley just beating the crap out of Fat Ass because he thinks they made a mistake and he shouldn't be there. That's a great reason to beat someone so much. I was about to say beat someone half to death, but it's more than half.
Fully to death, yeah. Yeah.
Very brutal. Watching this whole thing because it, like I said yesterday, it really shows us who's considered good and who's considered bad in this movie.
Yeah.
Switches things around. Basically, we see that Fat Ass is crawling on the ground and puts his hands over his face for protection. And Hadley doesn't care, and Hadley just kicks him in the head, like really hard. And then we see just the body just slump down. Again, no mercy whatsoever here with what he's doing. You know, very, very crazy. But I gotta say, Frank does a great job acting here. Because it really looks like he just got the crap beaten out of him. And, you know, the way that he falls back is also very, very nicely done. Yeah, give him credit for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I give him credit for this whole role. I think he's a great bit of casting for this role. Yeah,
for sure. You know, because again, we're supposed to be sympathetic with the character, and we can see what's going on here. You know, and as much as you know, we want to think about justice and everything like that. There's still a line that needs to be drawn, and Hadley crosses that line without a problem. And then Hadley turns around and screams up into the entire cell block. He puts his baton back and asks for the guy next to him to give him back his hat. And as he's putting on his hat, he looks up and goes, "If I hear so much as a mouse farting here the rest of the night, I swear by God and Sonny Jesus, you will all visit the infirmary. Every last motherfucker." So, again, he does not mince words here. Not for 1 second. And then he turns to one of the other guards and goes, "Call the trustees. Take the tub down to the infirmary." Well, at least he's acknowledging the fact that this guy needs to go to the infirmary. Yeah, because you'd think he'd say, "Oh, come on, he's not hurt. Just put him back in the cell."
Yeah.
"Oh, you're going to cry, baby? You're going to, because you got kicked in the face?"
I actually looked up the term tub of shit as well. Apparently the word tub, meaning an open wooden vessel made of staves and hoops, that originated in the 14th century, but it took until 1835 to evolve into the adjective tubby, meaning fat. Okay. And then it took until the 19th century for the term tub of lard and tub of guts emerged. And then apparently tub of was sometime in the 20th century and was, according to the source I looked upon, it was especially associated with military slang.
Interesting. So it was probably before 1947.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's not anachronistic that he would use that term.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense. You see, I don't even have to do research here. You're doing it all for me. I can have you on more often.
Well, I'm available.
Excellent. At this point, just call the trustees. Now, do you know what a trustee is?
No, that was interesting, actually. I've heard the term, but I didn't know exactly what it means in this context.
Well, what do you know of it? What context do you know?
Well, trustees are usually like, I think it was people like members of a committee or something who help out, like a school or something. They have trustees, people from like outside the school who volunteer their time or a part of committees and things like that. So I've never heard it in like a prison sense.
Well, in the Green Mile, which you mentioned earlier this week that you'd seen, so you have the character of Toot, who's a trustee, you know, played by Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, it's been a long time since
and
the Green Mile. So
to be the, you know, the prison being executed, you know, when they're going through a test run and stuff like that. And you see it a lot in prison movies that there are these guys that are known as trustees. Now, a trustee is an inmate who's earned the trust of the correctional officers through good behavior and is granted special privileges in exchange for performing labor.
Okay, so it's actually prisoners who are, mm-hmm. who are going to come and take us down to the infirmary.
So basically, there is eligibility criteria of who can be a trustee. So there has to be someone who does not have any violent record. They're usually serving time for minor offenses. They have to have a clean record while in the prison. Meaning that you have to have zero disciplinary infractions or write-ups while they're incarcerated. Time served. There's a specific portion of their sentence that they need to be have done before they can apply for this. But it's generally someone who's been there a long time. You know, and trustees usually handle essential daily maintenance and operational tasks around the facility. Sometimes they'll work in the kitchen, sometimes they'll do janitorial work, sometimes they'll be given work as groundskeepers, facility maintenance, things like that. And the type of benefits or privileges that these trustees get is a number of different types of things. It could be they get a sentence reduction, which is basically good time, they did good things. They sometimes get better housing, meaning they are usually in separate, quieter, or less restrictive cell blocks. They have increased freedom. They're able to they're given more time than others outside of their cells. And they also sometimes get extra food, better coffee, or specialized supplies and things like that. So yeah, that is what a trustee is. And I never thought about the fact that he's called a trustee because you trust him.
Yeah, you'd think that immediately, wouldn't you?
You would think that.
So if one of the terms is that they have to, it has to be a non-violent crime, but in Shawshank is a very high security prison, isn't it? So what would be the sort of crime that like non-violent crimes that you would land you in a place like Shawshank?
When we meet Tommy was a thief. He didn't do anything violent.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. I suppose it's about the level as well, as that you get people like embezzlers. If they embezzle enough, it would be seen, because you can embezzle like thousands, couldn't you? And that would land you in somewhere like that, probably.
Interesting. Yeah. So like we said, they get a little more leeway for things. But I mean, the only felonies that we learn about throughout this movie is murder, burglary, and armed robbery. So we don't know specifically what any of them had done. You know, like I said, in the book, it mentions to us that Red cut the brake line in his wife's car in order to get the insurance money. And he killed her, a neighbor, and another child.
Yeah, I think that was the major thing, wasn't it? I think the neighbor and the child, he didn't know were going to get in the car, but it ended up being a triple homicide.
I mean, in some ways, you might think of Brooks as a trustee, but because they do give him privileges and stuff like that. But he at some point states that he committed murder. So
he couldn't have been, yeah. Unless they were lax on that rule.
I don't know. And at this point, we see Haywood, and he is definitely not in good shape because he knows that not only did he bet on this guy and now won, but he helped facilitate this. You know, you might say it was a joke, but it doesn't matter because whatever it is, he caused this, you know, and he doesn't even know how to respond to it.
No.
Because, you know, the part of what they're trying to show us in this is that there are prisoners that remain human. They don't turn into animals when they're sitting in the, you know, in a place like this. Not everybody. But I like the way they show that. And then we get a shot of Red in his cell, and at that point we start hearing his narration. We hear him say, "His first night in the joint, Andy Dufresne caught me two packs of cigarettes. He never made a sound."
It's interesting that the ending of this scene shows that its main purpose is to tell us something about Andy Dufresne, and yet Andy Dufresne is barely in the scene. So it's a really nice piece of subtle
storytelling. Which again goes back to what we were talking about, you know, the other day about whether you would necessarily call Andy a co-lead or not. Because again, we've seen him maybe three times in the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. And I tend towards what you said about them being co-leads, because when I think of The Shawshank Redemption, I think of the two guys. I think of Morgan Freeman and Tim Robbins immediately. I don't single one of them out. So,
yeah. Well, of course, because that's the way we perceive them. We perceive them as two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, the question is which is it?
Yeah.
Is there anything differentiating between them? I don't know. Again, if I had to choose between them, obviously it's Red. Yeah. Like when I mean, you talked yesterday about Mystic River. So in Mystic River, it's clear that Tim Robbins is a supporting character.
Yeah.
So when you look at it from that perspective, you're like, okay, so I understand that this is a supporting character. So if he gets nominated, which he did, it'll be in the supporting category, not in the lead category.
Yeah. Yeah. But there are so many examples of strange categorizations in Oscar history. The one that always jumps to mind is Mahershala Ali in Green Book won Best Supporting Actor, and that was clearly a lead role.
I don't agree with you on that one.
No, do you not?
He wasn't supporting either. He's a little higher than supporting, but the main focus once again is on Aragorn. You know, there's
I can't remember his name in it, but I would put him higher up than that, I think. But there's definitely been some strange categorizations over the years, but it's some of them are hard to argue with. Like, it's hard to argue that Brando shouldn't be lead in The Godfather, and yet I can't. I don't know. It's hard. It's all about how you define a lead character, isn't it? If you do it by screen time, that's one thing. If you do it by their importance right. to the story, that's another. And
well, again, yeah,
it's hard to tell. Like, you say you see Shawshank Redemption,
yeah,
mainly as Red's story.
It's Red telling the story to us of Andy Dufresne.
Yeah, he's telling us the story, but he's telling us, but most of what he tells us is about Andy Dufresne. So it's Red tells the story, but it's not
but again,
his story.
If he's the character telling us this story, so it's as if we're sitting there and Red is talking to us.
Yeah.
But he's more than the narrator.
He's the narrator.
He's the narrator, but he's also... the one we're interacting with.
Yeah, and it definitely at the end after the escape, there's a long stretch right. at the end there where it definitely becomes Red's story because Andy Dufresne isn't there anymore, and we're following him. So, like the average narrator where they're narrating, but it's not their story, they don't usually right. become that big a part of the story,
but,
do they?
But so, on the other hand, you know, the way that Red tells this is just great. Not all movies that have narrators make you feel as if there's, you know, you're sitting there with the narrator telling you the story.
Yeah. But it's just the way it sort of, like we're saying, it holds back from a lot of details about Red. So it's a... It doesn't show us him coming to Shawshank and all those sort of things. So we get a sort of sketchy version of Red's story, and what we know about him is we get through Andy Dufresne. This is why they're so sort of inseparable as lead characters, I think, because what we know about each of them depends very heavily on
correct.
The other character as well. Yeah,
that definitely is the way that it works out. So the name that we couldn't remember before was Viggo Mortensen. I knew who it was.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah, Viggo Mortensen.
On the spot,
yeah.
Was the name. And it's very interesting the way that Red is telling us here, you know, that Andy lost him 2 packs of cigarettes. Because we already established last week that there are 20 cigarettes in a pack. And, you know, if they were betting just the cigarettes themselves, so he lost 40 cigarettes.
It's also interesting that that Red is still able to, even though he's saddened by what he sees, he's able to still see it in terms of the game, because he took no active part in causing the tragedy. So unlike Haywood, he's not torn up about it because he's one step
true,
removed
but,
from
but
it.
But Red is still torn up by it, that this type of thing had to happen.
Yeah, he is. He is, yeah, but I don't think he feels any personal guilt about it.
Not personal guilt, except for the fact that maybe he shouldn't have been betting on it. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, could be either of them. And then we hear the very loud buzzer. And it sounds like someone just scored a goal. You know, is the World Cup still going on? Who knows?
Yeah, I think it is. I don't have enough interest to know.
Yeah, I have no interest to know either. So. That's fine. To me, you know, movies. I have a really good friend who's a big sports fan, and you know, he'll ask me about sports movies. That's it. But he also knows not to talk to me about sports because I won't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like sports movies, but I don't like sports.
The same way. And that's how this minute ends. Is there anything else you wanted to add about the last 5 minutes that we've gone through over this week, or anything about Shawshank in general?
I don't think so. I mean, I just reiterate the point that I made in an earlier episode that it's brilliant how this plays out. As it's I feel like I've watched a short film that could always stand alone. It's episodic films. People often use the term episodic as an insult, but done right, it's really effective. And Shawshank Redemption, I think, that does episodic perfectly. It's little vignettes build up into something brilliant.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I like the way this. And again, when you're breaking it down the way we're doing it, you really can see it.
Yeah, it really highlights it, definitely.
Very, very, very. So today's segment is called Weekend Break. And it's all about Prison Break movies. So why don't you give us your top five, start with your number five, and work your way up.
Okay, this took a bit of paring down. There's a few that I thought about including. But my number five is the Jim Jarmusch film Down by Law, which is an interesting choice because it does feature a prison break, but we don't see any details of it. We see the guys in the cell. We see one of them mentioning that he's spotted a way out, and then we cut from them leaving the cell to them free. So we don't actually see it, but I quite like that.
Oh, wow. So that is that approach, like Reservoir Dogs, where you don't see the crime actually happen, but you just see the before and the after of it all?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right, yeah. In this, you don't see, you see from the cell to them outside, and we never see it, and we never need to know. My number four is old Best Picture nominee, I Am a Fugitive from a Chain Gang, which is a film that I really love. I haven't seen it for a long time, actually, but I really love it, and that has a great escape sequence from the Chain Gang.
Have you ever seen the movie made about that movie and the story?
No, I haven't. What movie is that?
Ooh, okay. There is a movie from the mid-80s with Val Kilmer that was called The Man Who Broke a Thousand Chains.
Oh, I have to look that up.
It's a great movie. And it's all about that story, because basically the fact that the movie was made, it became a social subject that people began to start fighting against in order
to get, and
it ended the idea of chain gangs in much of the US at that time.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. So yeah, the power of movies.
Yes.
Okay, my number three is had to be in there, The Great Escape. My number two is the 1960 Jacques Becker French film Le Trou, which is a great film, also known as The Hole.
What's it known as? The Hole?
The Hole, yeah. That's the British.
I've seen that. I really like that.
Yeah, I thought that was a fantastic film. Again, long time since I saw it, but it stuck with me as a great one. But my number one, just pipped it, which is a... I like a lot of sort of prison break films where it's sort of like a fun caper and everything, but this is a film that really gets into the sort of minutiae and nitty gritty of getting out of prison. It's the Robert Bresson film A Man Escaped, which again I haven't seen for a long time, but it stuck with me as a really sort of powerful and a really sort of subtle take on the prison break.
Yeah, I love that movie, actually.
Yeah,
and I'm not a fan of foreign films. I'm not like you and David, who love foreign films and live and breathe foreign films. You know, for me, English language films, that's the way you do it. But
apart from Amour, apparently.
Yes.
Yeah. You see, you dislike foreign films in the same way I dislike war films. Plenty of exceptions.
Exactly. Well, isn't that the way it always works? All right. Excellent. Thank you very much for that list. So we will now play the first of two daily games, and we will play Name that book adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Okay, this is a movie that came out in 2015, and the original name of the book is Strangers on a Bridge.
Strangers on a Bridge. What year was it, did you say?
2015.
Is it Bridge of Spies again?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
You see, you randomly got that. That's great.
I probably could have worked that one out anyway, but
yeah, you see, that's the problem when they have words in common, so it makes it a little more difficult to do that. But okay, you know, there's not much you can do about that. You can't, especially when I'm doing this randomly.
No, I'm happy. I'll take the win.
Okay. Okay. So you're saying that. A win is a win.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so let us play the second game that we're going to play, which is High-Low. I'm going to give you three different movies that have been nominated for Best Picture since 1950, and you have to tell me what their Rotten Tomato and IMDb scores are. So let's spin the wheel for your first one. Okay, this is an interesting one. You get Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, Top Gun Maverick. Right, now, I know that was popular with critics and...
From 2022.
Right, it's going to be quite high. I'm going to put it in the 90s. I'm going to guess about 94%, and IMDb, I'm going to guess 8.5.
Okay, so it's 8.2.
Ooh, close
and
again.
And it has a 96% ranking on Rotten Tomatoes, which, again, is amazing that number is so high. It's a very good movie.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't rank it that high.
No.
All right, let's spin the wheel for your next one. Okay, the 2005 film Munich.
Oh, Munich. Now, I'd put this one a bit lower, probably. I'm going to say it's 76% and 7.4.
Again, you need to go slightly higher. It's 7.5 and 78. So that's you're very close. So that's great. Have you seen Munich, right?
Yeah, I've seen Munich a long time ago. Again, I can't remember how I felt about it particularly. But it's definitely one that I'd like to revisit.
Okay, there's also an earlier movie that tells the exact same story from 1986 called The Sword of Gideon, which is also amazing.
And that's a good film, is it? Yeah. I've never heard of that one, so that's one to look up, definitely.
We keep talking about all these HBO original films, because both Sword of Gideon yeah. And The Man Who Broke 1,000 Chains are both... HBO original films from the 80s.
All right, okay.
Let's spin the wheel for your final one. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, this actually goes in with this week's theme. So it's the 1997 film The Full Monty.
Oh, okay. Oh, Naked Man, I see, yeah. right, that was a popular film. Very, very British. So I'll put the IMDb a bit lower than the Rotten Tomatoes, I think. I'm going to say Rotten Tomatoes, I'm going to say 89. And IMDb, I'm going to say 7.2.
Okay, so first of all, you got the IMDb right on the mark, on the money. It's 7.2.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
But the Rotten Tomatoes is 96%.
Oh, really? That is a lot higher than I thought.
Yeah. I like it. I think it's a very fun movie. Whether it's deserving of 96, I don't know.
Well, again, it's just cumulative, isn't it? It's enough people liked it. It's not so
correct.
Yeah, maybe we're underestimating the draw of naked men.
Apparently. All right, Andy, would you like for one final time this week? Because who knows, I might invite you back later this season if I run into trouble like I did in Pelham. So would you like to tell people where they can find Andy Golding?
Yeah, I can be your trustee.
Wait, but you have committed some pretty terrible crimes.
That's true, I've got quite a heinous past. Okay, you can find my writings on blueprintreview.co.uk, and you can find my new podcast with Todd Liebernow about the golden age of the animated short at Cartoon Breakdown Podcast. Just search for it for any way you find your podcast.
Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Andy, do you break down the cartoons the way that we're doing it here, minute by minute? How do you and Todd break those down?
We pick a theme, and then we select three to four cartoons that illustrate that theme, and then we just look closely at them. So yeah, we don't necessarily go through them minute by minute, but we have a close. I mean, they're only 7 minutes a piece generally, so we can get quite a close look at each of them in the,
7 minutes
in the time
each
we've
for
got.
Each of the movies you talk about, or 7 minutes total for the entire episode?
Oh, the seven minutes is the length of the films that we're talking about. So that's about how long they were. These are the classic old kind of cartoons like Bugs Bunny and Tom and Jerry and those sort of films that used to be shown before the main feature.
Wow. Okay. All right. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. And everyone have a great weekend. And get busy living.
I get busy dying.